Technorama episode 558.
Here we go.
Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you very much. We appreciate it very much. If you're welcome, you are welcome back. If you're returning, then welcome back even
welcome
more.
Back.
Darn it.
Always.
Let's start over. No. Please, let's not.
The virtual welcome mat is always out for you.
It is. We'll leave the porch light on for you. It attracts bugs and podcast listeners, apparently.
More geeks.
I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and joining me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm great. I'm feeling a little older.
First you have a birthday, then your son has a birthday. How's that go?
Yeah, I know, right? Before I know it. Yeah. Well, hopefully we continue to have birthdays. Let's put it that way.
That's right. I shouldn't mouth off because I've got one in a few weeks.
That's right.
But we'll still do this show like we're in our teens or 20-somethings or something. I'm not sure what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Never get, you're only as old as you feel or act. No.
Act. I'm more in the act thing. Yes.
All right. We don't have any in-studio guests this time with us, so Mr. Brian Brown is not feeling on top of his game, so he's going to take it easy this evening. Perhaps he's watching from
about 100. What game is he playing then?
Well, he's not playing the Technorama game, that's for sure.
Okay.
Let's get into the feedback, shall we?
All
we
right.
have plenty. Yes. Oh, looks like we're singing this by ourselves. Letters.
We got letters.
And more letters. We love your letters.
Put them in the corner. Got too many. Today.
There's no collusion.
Okay.
These are subliminal letters.
Oh, boy.
We need a wall.
Oh, look, I got a postcard from Russia. Wait.
All right, first one is from Claudio Miranda, longtime listener. Hey, fellas, great show as always. I know I'm late to the party, but I figure I'd throw my impacting game or games from the previous episode. You know, it's fine. You can give us feedback from a show we did eight years ago, and we will still read on this show.
Well, it is podcasting, so it is time shifted. So,
oh heavens, yes.
Your feedback can be also.
I am finally catching up from being 2 months, maybe even more behind. I was into late February, listening into early December, catching up on shows. But I think I'm almost into this week now.
Wow.
I'm trying to get all caught up so I can make sure that I've got room for Clinton when he goes all podcast a day on us in April.
I know. Well, you know, when we do the dog days of podcasting, and I try to listen to everyone.
Insane. Huh? It's insane.
Yeah. I try to listen to everyone, and it's hard to, so you always get pushed back. Your queue gets pushed back. So
yes, especially when you get to the tail end and we're really making that final rush for Dragon Con. I'm okay until about the last week, then the wheels fall off.
And I finally go, man, it's just another Chuck. Oh, God, I listen to him again.
I try to keep it short. Like, hey, Craig, talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
And he can't even squeeze that into his schedule. All right, let's continue with Claudio's. But for me, the games that have impacted me, had an impact on my life, were text adventure games as well as Doom. I know that Wolfenstein 3D was mentioned, but Doom, I'm going to say it that way every time, further surpassed that in terms of immersive 3D-ish frames per second. Yes, Doom was the one that came out with its own engine. I don't think Wolfenstein had its own engine, but that one certainly did take it. Quake, or maybe I'm thinking of Quake. Was it Doom or Quake? Which one had the engine you could build more stuff on? I can't remember.
Well, Quake did because you could scan everything. You could make your own maps. It was a little confusing to do, but you know, it's much easier with different engines. But yeah, it had an engine you could use.
I can't remember if it was whether it was Jonathan Strickland on Tech Stuff or the people on Stuff You Should Know. One of them talked about game engines. It was probably Jonathan. But Quake went even further than Doom, but giving you true 3D environment in frame perspective. The Retro Ahoy YouTube channel has some great documentaries on Doom and Quake.
Oh, cool.
As well as Wolfenstein 3D. Check them out here. And he gives links, which we'll have in our show notes, available on our website at chuckchat.com/technorama. There we go. So we've got one to Retro Ahoy Doom, Retro Ahoy Quake, and Retro Ahoy 3D Wolfenstein. What'd you do? You just deleted the link on us.
It's just a YouTube link. I'm
always making the link part of the text. Yes, because that is appropriate for the web.
Yes.
As far as worst game I've ever played, that was last week's, and we'll get into this week's as well for the responses to this. I can't say it was E.T. because I actually enjoyed and finished that game as a kid. You're probably one of the first.
What?
Only. In spite of the sprite collision frustrations, I actually read the fine manual, or TFM.
Right.
Read the fine manual. Why is my thing scrolling on me when I'm not touching the mouse?
I was cleaning up the show notes.
Oh, you're doing that. You're making the document shorter, which makes my text scroll off the screen. Thanks, man.
You're welcome.
Live editing. It's a wonderful thing. Where was I?
That's right.
Despite the sprite collision frustrations, that's a good tongue twister, at least for me anyway, I actually read the fine manual like a proud card-carrying nerd before I graduated to geek status. I can say that it was Superman 64. I had heard stories of how bad it was, but didn't believe it until I tried it myself. Horrible mechanics that made me long for the old Atari 20... He longed for the Atari 2600 Superman game. That's saying something.
Yeah, especially going from the Nintendo 64 version. Wow, okay.
Anyway... Onizaroni.
Onizaroni.
That's my Wi-Fi password. Oh, no.
You know what? We should make a recipe of an Italian dish called Onizaroni. Onizaroni. From Chef Boyardee.
Yeah. We also have website comics. You didn't know we had comments on our website, did you?
Imagine that. No.
I was looking at the links at the top of our show notes, and I went, okay, we can finally kill off Google Plus because it's dying. Careful, that bottle is a little slippery for whatever reason. Google Plus is going away in April, I believe it is. They're shutting it down. So I took that off our show notes, and I went, website comments. Have we checked website comments? Have we checked voicemail comments in a long time? It's been so long since anybody left us a voicemail. So I checked both of those and went, oh my gosh, like yesterday.
Oh.
We had someone leave a website comment. So I included it. Steve Trow, I believe I'm saying that closely enough, T-R-A-U-X or Trow, left us a comment to a Facebook page called The Choi Brothers Flashback Arcade.
Wow, this is cool.
Yes. And I believe
My Tron.
Yep. They've got house rules. There have been a lot of questions regarding children at the arcade. Well, our target audience is 15 to 80 year olds. Children are still welcome with proper parental guidance. We have posted the following house rules on top of the Facebook page on the front door of the arcade and the register. So please, if you're bringing young children, look over these house rules before coming in. This is a real place. I'm trying to find the location of it. Choi Brothers Arcade is with Logan. They get some regular posts in here. I encourage you to look at the...
They are in West Virginia.
They are in West Virginia. Okay, good. Yes,
yeah, if you go to About, it says they're in West Virginia.
Where is the About on that thing? I can't find it. Pinball machines and video games and About on the left. Yes, 405 28th Street, Vienna, West Virginia. So if you're in the West Virginia or D.C. area, let's find out. It says they're closed right now. Darn.
Yeah, so wait until they're open. But here in Rock Hill, there's a place called Joe's Arcade, and they refurbish old vintage arcade machines. And they have a showroom, so you can go in and play. I hadn't been in there in quite a while. And they've expanded, so they were in one... shop, and now they've kind of moved over, so they've got a bigger space now. And I might have to go in there and take a look. But they had last time I was in there, they had a bunch of video games in various, you know, states of repair. A bunch of them were running. Then they also had a bunch of cartridges, like 2600 cartridges and stuff like that, in there as well. So maybe I need to go back in there and take a look. They had some old record. Jukebox where the records were all in a bunk cake style.
A carousel.
The carousel where it would spin around.
Yeah.
they were kind enough to let me take a bunch of pictures of that, and it, which was kind of fun. So anyway,
we've seen some, we've seen and played some arcade games at Dragon Con as well.
Yes.
So a lot of fun.
I'm ready to go play some more.
I maybe as well, but I've got some work to do first. We are insane.
So you can earn some quarters?
Yeah. Yeah, I had my annual compensation review and I made sure my boss threw in some quarters.
Yeah.
We get to our question of the week from last week. What was the worst video game you have ever played? And we got some great comments in here. Jack Jaffe just says Life. I didn't know there was a video game called Life. It sounds like an adaptation of the board game, but okay.
Or an adaptation of his own personal life.
Dale Critchley writes, E.T. for the 2600. We knew somebody was going to write that in. Yeah, I played it. Fell in a pit and somehow a flying alien couldn't get out. I feel honored to have had this part in history. That would be rather interesting. I played Superman, but I'd never played E.T.
I'm trying to remember. I don't think I ever owned E.T. I remember a kid had it and we were like, oh, that's okay. And then messed with it for a little bit and that was it.
Well, Tiffany writes back and says, it's a well-known glitch that had that massive glitch. Ironically, it makes the game a bit more valuable. I wonder what you could get for an E.T. cartridge these days, knowing the whole story behind the landfill in Alamogordo and all that good stuff.
I don't think you can probably get much for them.
I'll bet someone with a 2600 wants one of those just to say they have it.
Well, let's pull up eBay and see what...
You do that while I'm reading some more of these replies. Dale writes back, right. Yep, but he asked, it just so happens that the worst game I played actually is the worst game ever, but yeah, historical artifact. Myron Dubler says E.T., of course. Lucas said E.T. as well from his girlfriend Nikki, and that was before he saw the comments. Grand Theft Auto from Christy Hartman. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Brian Parker writes and he says, got to join the crowd for E.T. on the 2600. Tiffany Mangan, wife of Jack Mangan, who's a frequent guest on here. She's been on the show as well. Writes in, Echo the Dolphin. Danthal Fairbairn says, Spawn for PS1. And John Miller Jr. says, Superman 64, a game so bad, game pirates don't bother with it. That's pretty low.
By the way, you can get E.T. on eBay for $6.95.
I'm in.
Cartridge only, tested, work perfect. What they say?
A little dirty. Just have to brush it off. Came out of the landfill.
Yeah. Blow the dirt off.
May smell like landfill. So thank you to everybody who commented on that. We appreciate it very much. We will have another question for you at the end of the show and post that on Facebook as soon as Saturday, we'll say.
Yeah.
Should we do the history thing?
Yes.
We do not need to roll D20s because it's just us. Where is the history music? There it is. On this date in history for March 6, 2019. I do that just as a joke. It's March 6th. It's the 65th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 300 days remaining in 2019. It was on this date, March 6th, 12 BC, that Roman Emperor Augustus is named Pontifex Maximus. I'm sorry, I'm just thinking about Life of Brian again. Incorporating the position into that of the emperor.
I thought that was the name of a condom or something. Pontifex Maximus. Anyway, it was 498 years ago today that Ferdinand Magellan arrives in Guam.
All right, and he set up an airbase there for the U.S. Wasn't that nice of him?
Yeah, it was nice.
The first joint secretary of the Royal Society, Henry Oldenburg, publishes the first issue of the Philosophical Transactions of the Royal Society, the world's longest-running scientific journal, on this date in 1665.
It was also on this date in 1820 that the Missouri Compromise is signed into law by President James Monroe. The compromise allows Missouri to enter the Union as a slave state, bringing Maine into the Union as a free state, and makes the rest of the northern part of Louisiana Purchase territory slavery free.
I'm not sure that's a good compromise, but it happened. We'll go with it.
Sounds very complicated, to be honest with you.
Dmitry Mendeleev, whew, struggle over that one, presents his first periodic table to the Russian Chemical Society on this date in 1869. I wonder how many elements were on that first periodic table.
Three.
Hydrogen, helium, and Forgot oxygen, we're all gonna die.
Yeah, that's right. It was on this date in 1899 that Bayer registers aspirin as a trademark.
And we're all glad of it. At least my heart is, and so is my cardiologist. It was 76 years ago today that Norman Rockwell published Freedom from Want in the Saturday Evening Post. Move your cursor, please.
Hey, mine?
With a matching essay by Carlos Boulosan as part of the Four Freedom series. See, watch what happens when I put my cursor there. You kind of get a little flag that gets in the way.
Oh, sorry. Gotcha.
Move your cursor.
Yeah. I was on this date in 1975 that for the first time the Zapruder film of the assassination of John F. Kennedy is shown in motion to a national TV audience by Robert J. Groden and Dick Gregory.
That had to be pretty shocking. I don't remember that particular moment in 1975. I'm sure we've all seen the Zapruder film of the assassination where the motorcade is coming down. And anyway, March 6th, 1992, the Michelangelo computer virus begins to affect computers. All right.
And happy birthday goes out on this day to French author and playwright Cyrano de Bergerac, born on this date in 1619.
You know what story he wrote, right?
Yeah, it was, I started to say Roseanne, but that was...
that was the movie.
I know.
The dude with the big nose.
Yes.
Okay.
What about it?
German physicist and astronomer Joseph von Fraunhofer was born 232 years ago today.
And Aaron Lufkin Dennison, American businessman, co-founded the Waltham Watch Company and was born on the same date in 1812.
Watch. He went up to his friends. He goes, watch, 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 watch,
watch.
Watch! Boo. A better comedian than me, born March 6, 1906, Lou Costello was born today.
And Ed McMahon, the American comedian, game show host, and announcer, was born 96 years ago today. Wait, I don't remember him being necessarily a comedian.
We'll go with that.
Guy. He was a sales guy.
Ed McMahon?
Yes. He sold... He was still sold stuff before he got on TV and shit and stuff. So
well, he was most notable in my memory from the Johnny Carson show.
Yeah, a little sidekick.
Gordon Cooper, American engineer, pilot, astronaut, was born on this same date in 1927.
An Italian economist and inventor of Lorenzo's oil, Augusto. What?
We don't even know what Lorenzo's oil is, but okay, we'll go with that.
Yeah, Augusto. Odone, born on this date in 1933.
Oh, I loved him in Deep Space Nine. Odone.
Odone. I'm sorry.
American lawyer and politician, second mayor of the District of Columbia, Marion Barry. Wasn't that Chuck Berry's brother from Back to the Future? Marvin.
Yes.
Oh, that was Marvin. Yes,
Marvin Barry.
That's about 83 years ago today.
Russian general pilot and astronaut, Valentina Terestrikov. Tereshkova is 82 today.
Hey, that was one of your better Russian names.
Yeah.
Adam Osborne, Thai Indian engineer and businessman. He founded the Osborne Computer Company, and he was born on that same day in 1939.
And also born on that same date in 1947, American actor, director, producer, and activist Rob Reiner.
Yes. English singer-songwriter Kiki Dee was born on this date in 1947. You remember what song she was noted for, right?
Think so.
Well, she did the one with Elton John. Don't go breaking my heart.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I know she had a singing career of her own, but I don't remember any of Kiki Dee's songs. Is the music over already? It is.
Yeah.
Darn it. We'll do the birthdays outside the frame. No, we'll get them. I'm just moving them around. They were in the wrong place.
Oh.
That's the way it was on this date in history of March 6, 2019. Let's do the listener birthdays anyway. March 7th, Ben Maddox, a.k.a. Captain Rootbeer. Caleb from Dancing with Elephants has got to be about 24 now. I think he was 2 when the podcast started. He's on March 7th also. March 8th is Ali Zain Youssef, a.k.a. Super L 1394. Isn't 1384 the FireWire spec?
Something like
that. That also happens to be one of the ID of one of my speaking sessions at our conference. I have 1384, 85, and 86, just to be careful. because, you know, 85 is more than 1384. March 8th is also BJ Kiefer, AJ, a.k.a. BJK. It's almost three of the letters for my license plate. Andy Helsby of Absablog and Luthley is March 11th. Also on March 11th is Ken Kitzman, a.k.a. Kitzcan. For a minute, I thought that said kitchen. If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki, add it, and we will give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. If it's your birthday and you're not on the calendar this week, well, happy birthday to you anyway. We wish you all the best and hope to give you a shout out next year at this time. Just go over to chuckchat.com/wiki.
And wait for us.
And yeah, tune in again this time. Same bat channel, same bat next year.
Yeah.
We have some news. We have some good space news, everyone. Let's see if we have anything close to that. No, so we'll go with this.
Good news, everyone!
Okay. We just got an insane photo from Japan's spacecraft. The one that was landing on an asteroid. So yes. Japan's space agency pulled off something awesome this week. Its spacecraft Hayabusa 2 touched down on asteroid Ryugu, collected a sample, and jumped off again. To remember this, we now have an epic photo from Ryugu's surface potentially showing marks of the historic encounter. Hayabusa 2 and actually arrived on Ryugu in June of last year, because June was the middle of last year, and dropped a pair of tiny cookie tin-sized rovers to explore the asteroid in September. Because they're so small and the terrain is so rough, these rovers get around by hopping across the ground. But the spacecraft didn't just go down and drop rovers. The most exciting part of Hayabusa 2's mission is this: to bring an asteroid sample back to Earth. That's cool. Here's how you get a sample from an asteroid. On February 22nd, Hayabusa 2 made its first touchdown on the surface of Ryugu and fired a bullet at it. Pew! Oh, you shot me in the asteroid. It shot a tantalum bullet at a velocity of 300 meters per second, or 984 feet per second, into the surface of the asteroid. This impact kicked up material that hopefully made its way into Hayabusa 2's waiting collection canister. In all, the encounter took less than a minute. The new image was taken 1 minute after touchdown, when the spacecraft had already bounced off the asteroid and was looking back from an altitude of about 25 meters or 82 feet. This picture that we had on the screen shows the spacecraft's shadow as it ascends, along with the mysterious marks on the landing surface, and had nothing been there before touchdown. There's a helpful mark on this image. The purple circle, which we don't have on the screen, but you can find through the show notes, is the landing site before and after the red arrow points. So go check it out. Very cool picture. It almost looks like the, are those solar panels? What is it? There's like six pads and then a center pad. Interesting.
Oh, yeah. I think the ship is actually in the middle, and it looks like, solar panels on the side.
Or that's just the feet that it used to push off.
That's true, too. I don't know.
Not a lot of gravity on an asteroid, but enough so you can land, grab your stuff, and push off. We have more space news.
More, you say?
We like space news.
Yeah. So humanity has a 30 million page backup plan and is heading to the moon.
Okay.
Thanks to SpaceX, by the way. So when SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket took off last Thursday night, it was carried humanity's entire backup plan with it. So I don't have to worry about losing my podcasts.
Are they doing the seed bank that's frozen?
Yeah. Maybe. So let's see. So it headed to the moon, the world's ultimate cold storage unit. I don't know about the worlds, because it's not really on the world.
It's our world. It belongs to our world.
That's true.
Mars hasn't claimed it yet.
Yeah. So the March Mission Foundation created the Lunar Library, a 30 million page long compendium of humanity's greatest cultural offerings. Oh, so our podcasts are there.
Oh, thank goodness. We're part of the greatest cultural offerings.
If we're the greatest we've got to offer, we're screwed.
We're like one sentence on one paragraph on one page of that 30 million page compendium.
Yeah. Don't listen to Technorama. Anyway, so
under no circumstances.
Yeah. So encoded on its specifically designed disk meant to last a billion years, and send it to the moon to keep it safe. The disk is being carried to its final resting place on the moon's surface aboard Bereshit.
Excuse me?
Israeli, huh? Yeah, excuse me. The Israeli spacecraft.
Does a beer sheet in the woods?
Only if it falls, you can hear it. Never mind. It was an Israeli spacecraft that carried it to space on the Falcon 9. What are you doing?
I don't know. I think an ad starts to play. Is that on my end or your end?
Something starts to play. Oh, stupid music.
Yeah, actually, thanks.
Mute the site. So the Lunar Library contains a vast archive of human history and civilization.
Okay.
Covering all subjects, cultures, nations, languages, genres, and time periods, everything from the contents of Wikipedia to a compilation of human languages, the Rosetta Project, books selected by Project Gutenberg, as well as genome maps, 60,000 analog images and of pages and books, photographs, illustrations, documents, and much of the world's greatest art, music, literature, and scientific knowledge. It is all encoded on a disk that is composed of 25 nickel disks. So you can get your set too at Amazon.
For $1.25.
Yeah. Each only 40 microns thick, made for the AMF by Nano Archival.
So it's the modern version of microfiche.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, how do you read it? So it says it's encoded on it.
Yeah.
You know, like a record, you know, somebody could probably figure it out because it's got a groove and it's, but.
Neat.
I don't know. That's pretty cool.
I'm glad someone thought of, you know, putting it up there. I hope that there's frequent software updates, you know, because we're always writing new material.
I was going to say, it's outdated as of last Thursday.
As soon as you publish it, it's out of date. That's right.
Yeah, I can see that. Hey, they're getting ready to launch, and a guy's running, shaking some papers in his hands. Wait.
I've got patch one ready to go.
Patch one.
All right. Anyway. Next story is also space related from NPR. Space Station celebrates a new era in exploration with the arrival of SpaceX capsule. Humans have entered SpaceX Crew Dragon while in orbit for the first time just hours after the commercial spacecraft docked with the International Space Station on Sunday morning. The new space vehicle, carrying only cargo and a human dummy, who shall remain anonymous, launched Saturday from NASA. It was not a member of the Technorama staff.
No.
Launched Saturday from NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida.
That's actually where Brian's at right now. Sorry.
Careful. Careful, he may not come back.
Yeah.
Let's see. On Sunday, the ISS crew watched as Crew Dragon became the first American commercial space vehicle designed to carry humans to dock at the station, according to NASA. Astronauts David Saint-Jacques and Oleg Artemyev, we're going to go with that, swung open the hatch and entered the capsule at 7:07 a.m. in Houston. What were they doing in Houston if they were... Okay. Where NASA employees watched, the successful maneuver was also greeted with cheers.
Oh, period. In Houston. Yeah. I don't know.
That was a comma.
Yeah.
The successful maneuver was also greeted with cheers from the Hawthorne, California headquarters of Elon Musk's ambitious space company. Quote, "Congratulations to all nations, private space firms, and individuals who wake up every day driven by the magic of explorations. American astronaut Anne McClain, the third crew member on the station, said at a welcoming ceremony broadcast over NASA TV, "This day belongs to all of us." So good on them. We now have SpaceX Dragon going up.
Hey, I had a funny thought when I saw a picture. I don't see it in this article, but it's a picture of the dummy was sitting in the seat. It looked like the Starman, you know, that's in the Tesla, and he's sitting there and. I just thought it would be hilarious if SpaceX didn't tell anybody, but put like a model of a xenomorph in the capsule. So when they opened it on the station, whoa,
one of the creepy skeleton space guys from Doctor Who. Who turned out the lights? Who turned out the lights?
That's right.
They have no sense of humor.
Quick, jettison this thing.
Xenomorph. The dummy should just have the face hugger on it and leave it at that.
That would have been hilarious.
Okay, then. All right. We are taking a quick break. Yes, we are taking a quick break. It's the 30-minute mark. So we'll be right back with the Hacks and Strange Stories and a whole bunch of other stuff. So stick around. Don't want to miss it. You know what? I got nothing.
Okay. That was the quickest break I've ever taken in my life.
Give you enough to take a sip of water. I just realized the soundboard, I didn't line up any audio clips.
That's all right.
It took about 15 seconds, and I just didn't do it before the show started.
We should just interact, reenact our IDs and stuff. Hi, I'm so-and-so. You're listening to Technorama.
Yeah, you're a so-and-so, all right.
Yeah, I'm a so-and-so.
Go ahead. Which one do you want? You want the dice roller or do you want the hearing aids?
I'll go with the hearing aid. This one.
All right, go for it.
All right, so Tempion is developing an open source hearing aid hardware based on Teensy 3.6.
Is that an OS hardware? What is that?
I don't know. Let's read on. I'm kind of curious. That's why I threw it in here, because I thought it sounded interesting. So the benefits of, because I love open source, and I think it has a great place in this world. Obviously, it's made changes to everybody, the internet experience that you see every day in and day out. So anyway, the benefits of open source software and hardware far exceed simple costs and savings for consumers. Sure, from consumer perspective, open source software usually means free, as in free from cash. But it also often provides a quality improvement through community development. Corporations can benefit from it from that in order to reduce their costs in research and whatnot in exchange for sharing their own research. Now, Tempion is taking advantage of that ethos to bring better hearing aid technology to the market. If you're not hard of hearing and haven't used hearing aids, then you may not even be aware that there have been advancements to there are advancements to be made.
Get those verbs right, Craig.
I kept seeing the where in there. So where? Anyway.
No.
So at the most basic level, a hearing aid has three major components: a microphone. I started to say microwave, a microphone, an amplifier, and a speaker. The hearing aid picks up the sound through the microphone, amplifies it, and then pipes it through the speaker in the ear, hopefully loudly enough to be heard. So the problem is that simply making something louder doesn't really make it easier to hear. And I think you've talked about this, being able to tune, the range you're listening to make it easier to pick out stuff in a crowd. So especially as it relates to aging, hearing loss often affects some frequencies, which is what I was just talking about. So someone can may be able to hear at low frequencies, but not high ones. And just cranking up the volume is only going to drown out the high frequencies where the low frequencies they already hear. I won't go into all the detail, but Tempion will be launching this technology which is a board with a microphone and headphone jacks through their own website on March 1st. The goal is to promote research and improve the quality of life for people living with hearing trouble. At launch, it will cost about $299. Of course, because it's open source, you can go ahead and make your own device by heading over to the Tempion GitHub page, and they have information on how to build it if you would rather.
So this looks like pretty cool. This looks like the device would hang around your neck, because it's obviously too big to go in your ear. The circuit board, based on it, it doesn't have any exact measurements on it, but there's one being held in the hand, and it easily fits in the palm of your hand. So I'm guessing it's a neck wearing device, and two headphone jacks would imply a right ear and a left ear, which you would be required to wear earbuds at all times. The device itself is a microphone. Now, this is similar to other devices that I've seen. The ones that I wear, I have some Miracle Ear devices. I got them last June. Very happy with them, but they tend to be pricey because you're paying for a very small form factor, very discreet. In fact, I was watching a video that we made at work in January, and I had to look closely. I knew what I was looking for. But did I wear my hearing aids on that video? Because I honestly couldn't tell that closely. It was 1080p, and I'm looking at the video. I really can't tell if I am or not. Oh, wait, there's the clue. I found it.
Well, yeah, when we were on the cruise, I don't remember. I mean, I saw you with them, but I they were so small. I didn't. You don't even.
Yeah, they're small. And they have great service because I go in about every 6 months, get them clean, get them tuned up. They recheck you annually. So there's a service that goes with this. But like they said, just turning up the volume doesn't fix a hearing problem. You have to. I had a very good analysis and a profile made of what frequencies I could hear. They spent probably an hour doing a speech analysis of, okay, repeat this phrase. Now, what letter did you hear? And count to this and do that. And after an hour, they came up with a profile and put that in as the initial format, then went back, I think it was once a week, to do a further analysis. What's working? What doesn't? You know, kind of echoes here. And I'm seeing, so you know, that was part of the package that I bought that was pricey. I don't know what this means, because if I'm losing hearing on the higher end frequencies, that's the part they tune. And that's what this device does also. Like they said, just turning up the volume doesn't help you, because you'll just get more low frequency and not really make up for the high frequency, or the other way around, of course.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So when you do when you enable the processing part where mm-hmm. you're filtering out frequencies and to fine tune into what you want to hear, mm-hmm. Is latency an issue?
No, not at first it was, because I was picking up my own voice, but they had to do sort of a noise cancellation on my own voice. Mm-hmm. So I was, it was as if I had like a condenser microphone a foot in front of my mouth and I was listening through the headphones. I could tell there was a little bit of latency. It was like being in a large swimming arena, a natatorium is what it's mm-hmm. called, where you get that echo off the wall, but it's ever so slight. But once we canceled that out, it was pretty good. And again, some of it is your brain retraining, like when you first get glasses, like, whoa, things are a little distorted. Two years later, you don't notice that when you're wearing glasses. Now, if you go to contacts and then back to glasses, especially progressive glasses, you'll notice that. This is an interesting project. I have heard things like this were coming. The hearing wearables is a huge market that is going to drive the cost down. So instead of paying $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 for a pair of high quality hearing aids, you could be paying $200, $300, or $400. Now what the quality and the service is like out of those remains to be seen. But if people like Apple got into this and you know, having Apple hearing aids or wearing the AirPods had mm-hmm. a hearing component to them, that would be incredibly useful for a lot of people mm-hmm. who just can't afford that right now.
Well, I mean, they're nowhere near the quality you have, but I have some wireless earbuds that do, I can listen to ambient sounds and you can kind of tweak it a little bit.
I particularly like the fact that I can take mine and, you know, instead of listening 360, I can take the microphone and say, all right, there's a lot of background noise in here. I want to shape it to focus. I mean, it's not totally isolating everything, but it turns it more into shotgun microphone where it says, just listen more intensely at what's right in front of me. So we can have a conversation in a noisy restaurant.
Yeah. So I remember you telling me that the wife filter worked pretty good.
There's no wife filter. Stop trying to get me in trouble. I want child canceling headphones.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you're on a flight and someone's crying, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah. What do you, real quick before we move on.
Yes.
So what kind of battery life do you get on those things?
I get about a day. So I've got the rechargeable ones. If you get the ones where you replace the batteries, you can get like a week, 2 weeks out of them. I went with the rechargeable because I didn't feel like opening them up and changing the battery. My parents have the battery changing ones, and you get like lifetime supply of batteries. So it's with the service that I got. So if I'd gotten they were a little cheaper too, but I paid the premium to get the rechargeables. So at night, it's like your watch. You know, you put them in the charger, you pull them out in the morning, you're good to go all day.
Yeah. So it's not like you can't hear without them, but it helps when they're there.
Right. Again, it's like glasses. I can see, I can drive. I just, if I try to read, it's very difficult and I'll get a headache really fast without glasses. Okay. I hear much better with hearing aids, but there's most days around the house where I'm not wearing them just because, you know, I get up so blasted early, I forget. And then by the time the day has already marched on, it's like, you know, I can do without them. But I use them all the time when I go out and ask Donna. I'm usually halfway to the car, go, oh, forgot my ears, and go grab them off the bedstand. They're in the headboard, so the cat doesn't play with them because they are small. And if they're left out in the open, I'm sure he'll start batting them around. And they're
cats will not leave anything alone.
Nope, they won't.
Especially if it's expensive
and small.
Oh, look at this.
Yep. What did we lose? We lost a remote. No, we lost something and found it under one of the end tables in the living room. You're like, from the bedroom to the living room. I forgot what it was, but it was like, where is this thing? And we looked and looked and looked. Finally, it turned up in the living room. Oh. So anyway,
I was watching TV.
Speaking of little things that cats like to bat around, D20s.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a lot of... Todd often gets up on the desk in the studio and knocks mine off the desk. So if you want to know how fair your D20 is, we got an article for you. Matt Fickett Art at mattfickett.com created a dice roller. It's a little cup that has a D20 in it, and he takes a picture of it and then analyzes it. So an automatic system for rolling a polyhedral die and taking photos of the rolls, extracting the image of just the die from those images, clustering the images of the die by which face is shown, and analyzing the results. He says, I was inspired in part by the awesome Dice Blog's 2012 post comparing D20 fairness between two manufacturers. Christopher Galpin in 2014 links to a number of other interesting analyses. John Kern in 2006 does Bayesian analysis for Pass the Pigs. They rolled. Didn't Pass the Pigs used to be called Pigmania? Where you rolled the pigs? Anyway, they rolled and tallied by hand. So he came up with a device that rolls it, and he's got the GitHub information in here as well, just like the last one. And charts and charts and charts on this article. Oh my gosh. He rolled how many, not just, you know, did you get a 1, did you get a 20? He went through manufacturers. He went by color. He went by, you know, he's got the whiz dice yellow. And he's got standard and deviation.
Here's copper, steel.
Yes, by material. He goes by how many rolls, 100 to 150 rolls. And there are some interesting anomalies in here if you scroll through the charts. We're just showing one on the screen right now. But the I thought we'd do an analysis of our own. He didn't analyze the Chessex dice, which I think all of mine are Chessex at this point. Some of them came out of the seconds bin because they're discolored. But
makes on, me, I'm going to grab mine. Hold on.
I think yours are Chessex also. No, yours are in a tube. Chessex usually come in the little clear cylinders.
Now these are from eons ago. Let's see. These are from...
See if yours are on the chart. Are they whiz dice?
No.
I thought we would do a little analysis of our own. So I made a bar chart that showed... I did some analysis on the rolls that we do on this show, you know, because we often roll for playing on this day in history.
Yep.
And based on that data, I put together a close analysis of what Chuck rolls, what Craig rolls, and what Brian rolls. Craig, you're going to have to wait a second to see it on the screen on Facebook. But apparently, I can't roll anything past about an 8. Most of mine are in the 1 to 4 range.
Wait, how did you... Whoa, you went back and listen to our shows?
Craig, use your imagination. Oh. How much analysis do you think I actually did for this show?
Just making the graph.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Brian rolls anything from 5 to 19 with his strong suit between 10 and 18. And Craig never seems to roll anything below about a 13. So, you know, where are these rolls? In fact, let's test this theory now, just between Craig and I. Pick your favorite die and give it a roll.
A 20. Not favorite, just do a 20.
Yeah. Do a D20. What'd you get?
All right. All right, here you go. 19.
2. Need I say more?
Yep. 12. 4. 20.
He'll do this all night.
Yeah. 3 o'clock in the morning. 9.
I didn't have to do a whole lot of research for that graph. It pretty much speaks for itself.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, shout out to the chat room that we've got. We've got a lot of people that are showing up, popping in, popping out. We mentioned Evan Small at the top of the show. John Miller Jr. was here. Ralph Wangler from the cruise, the Star Trek cruise. Yes, he was there. Clinton Elvard, our co-host on The Topic is Trek. There it is. Yes. Is also joining us tonight. Glenn Bradley. Glenn Bradley? We also met him on the cruise.
Did we?
He was the one guy who just stopped and said, "Service now." And I turned around and went, "Whoa."
Oh, yeah.
Good to see you, man.
I see Mark Trouble. I see somebody that knows you from Wisconsin, Robert Larson.
Yes, Bob Larson, an old high school buddy. I was just thinking about him. I had a memory. I can't remember what it was. I meant to say, "Hey, Bob, remember when we used to do this?" And now I can't remember what it was. It was, I'll think of it. I'll think of it. It was something that was unique to just me and Bob, and I can't remember what it was.
Well, think about that for a second. We got Mike Robinson.
Yep.
My buddy Trouble. Jason Jones. Yeah, Mark. Jason Jones showed up. Of course, John Miller Jr. I think you already called him out.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. You can join us live Sundays at 9:30 when we're on here. If you subscribe to the Technorama page or you follow one of us, we're going to share it. Hey. You'll get a little announcement.
If we didn't call you out, sorry, because Facebook doesn't show us everybody.
Facebook's just weird.
Kind of weird.
Facebook is weird.
Stupid Facebook.
So thank you for joining us.
But they don't have problems sharing data with every other person in the planet, and they can't share who's watching my video.
Oh, the other weird thing is when you watch it later, you get all the names.
Uh-huh.
It's very bizarre. Let's do the Patreon.
We'll come back and let you know.
We have some other things we need to thank people for, and that is being a Patreon patron. We have a record number of people now contributing to this show, and in our undying thanks, we give them a shout out on the show, and we also give them extra content that is only available to them. So let us begin the roll call. Kyle Nishioka. We could probably put a bell in there. Here, we'll do the Mario coins.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
And more appropriate. I thought the Mario coin was for Donna, our super video engineer. Abner Braverman. Ben Vaughn. The coin can't keep up. Mike Wills. Mega Podtastic. Night King Studios. Gary Lindros.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. John Clifford. Leon. John Noble. John Noble.
Oh, that John Noble?
Does the term asleep at the wheel mean anything?
Huh? What?
Our John Noble. Chris MC. Alexis Duran, a.k.a. AD Dude. Saturday Morning Media, a.k.a. Greg Pachoco. Steve Therian. Yorga Schrawin. What was Yorga's new name?
That's Steve Therian?
Yeah, that's Steve Therian. What's Yorga's new handle?
I don't know. What was it?
We got to go back and listen. I'm trying to remember what we named your guy. Everybody's going to get a handle on this. John Miller Jr. Does he have a handle?
Yeah, but I won't share it here.
It's not family safe. Amber Elstead, Harold McKinstry, Amy Bowen, Denise Iglesias, and Stephen Weshy.
Weshy.
Thank you very much. If you want to become a patron, go over to patreon.com/technorama podcast for as little as a dollar a show. And if we don't produce a show, you don't pay. That's the best part.
That's right.
But hopefully it doesn't come to that. But I know we take vacations and have work things that interrupt from time to time.
By the way,
yes,
there will be no show next week.
Why not?
I'm out of town.
Oh man. Maybe what if I find a guest? What if Brian and I want to do
it? You know what? I will not be here next week. If you want to continue in my stead, sure.
You know how much extra work it is when you're not around?
Yes.
I think I'm going to take the week off.
Yeah. That's right.
You do the lion's share of work on this show, and it certainly has proven true this week.
And we all have our assigned jobs. We do our part.
Apparently, I just show up and smile.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. And before the song wears out, we're going to... I don't think we've gotten this far into the song before. It's a good song.
Yeah. Oh, well. I didn't know that was in there.
24 seconds left. Let's just play it out. It's a good song. Because our Patreon people deserve it.
That is pretty good.
Love that.
Nice.
Thank you very much. I got to find out who did that so we can give them credit for it. But that is the metal version of the Imperial March, apparently.
It's for the Chrome Darth Vader.
Geek Library. Captain Phasma?
Yeah.
Into the Geek Library with you.
Yeah.
This one's all yours, buddy.
I thought this was an interesting webcomic, so I thought I'd put it in here in the Geek Library.
Yes.
So it's in the future, where our world has become an exercise in contradictions. We are more connected than ever, but alone. Healthier, whatever. Sick. Safer than ever, but ultimately vulnerable. The Seed is a story. Seed, which is the name of the webcomic, is a story for these future times, where the relationship between a girl and an AI system begins simply but quickly complicates things for an entire world.
Where are you reading this? Because all I'm seeing is the webcomic itself.
I put the description in our show notes so we could read it.
Oh, good idea. Oh, there it is. Yes.
Yeah. And I actually linked to the first episode. So that's where the link goes to. Anyway, okay. You can just go to the website and look at it. But if you go scroll down, you can see the guys are working on the AI. The AI is not responding, but it's actually working. It's just not responding back to them, I guess, because it's, you know, is frustrated. Anyway, go check it out. I think from the episodes I read of it, it's really interesting. But if you scroll down, it's like a really long web page.
Yeah.
But the comic reveals itself as you scroll down, which I think is really cool.
It has a manga format, if I'm not mistaken.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. So I think they've got like 17, 18 episodes now. So I think it's enjoyable.
I'm kind of digging the artwork.
Yeah, it's good.
I just look at the pictures.
Yeah. I didn't read it. Words. Oh, a picture.
That brings us to the end of the show. We have our question of the week this week. What brands are you loyal to and why? For example, Apple or Google or Coca-Cola, Nikon. Doesn't necessarily have to be something in the tech sector. Could be, you know, like Coca-Cola. Why are Nike. You loyal to those? Nike, Nikon, Nikkei?
Well, you know, for a long time I've been loyal to Nike because that's the only shoe I really felt like I was comfortable in.
What? You're not in the Adidas or Puma camp?
No.
Go listen to Ridiculous History, their episode on the Dassler brothers, Adidas versus Puma.
I think I read
story.
About that. Or I listened to that or
yeah,
something. I vaguely remember. But I'm just curious. I mean, you know, obviously with computers, there's the big Apple and, you know, Windows camp kind of thing. So.
Mac or
PC.
A brand has to earn my trust and loyalty. And when I am loyal, I am fiercely loyal. But when I am opposed, I am fiercely opposed.
Well, I'm with you. I mean, I like Google. I know they're not perfect, but I've gotten a lot of value out of the products that they've used over the years. And anytime they announce something, I'm like, where do I sign up? You know, I'm going to go sign up for it. Nikon, up until just recently, that's the only camera I really shot digitally for 12 years, 15, maybe, well, I'm sorry, back up, 12, more like 17 years. So
what was your first camera? What was the first camera you ever held in your hand and took a picture with?
Digital or?
Any camera.
Was my mom and dad's Minolta.
Okay. 35 millimeter.
It's a 35 millimeter. Yep. As a matter of fact, I bought an adapter. I can use the lenses that I owned for, or I have on that camera on my new digital camera, which is neat.
Hmm.
So 45-year-old lenses I'm using today, but the Minolta, it was actually mom and dad's camera and I shot, shot some pictures with it. But as far as digital goes, my first one was an Olympus. Kim got me. It was like a 1 megapixel, which is funny by today's standards, but it did really well. It was at least a good starter camera, and I used it a lot. And then I got a Nikon, and that was just it. I love the feel, the grip on it. I was very comfortable with it. Even as they had new models,
mm-hmm.
everything was very familiar. You know, of course, they added new features that weren't on the previous model, but the menu system, the way it feels, the stuff working with it, it would just work for me. So
nice.
But now I'm in a Sony camp.
For cameras?
Yes.
Because you're shooting the smaller format ones. You're not doing DSLRs on the Sonys.
Oh, no.
Right.
No. I got a full frame Sony A7 III now.
Nice.
Yes.
All right.
I'm serious, man.
You're a Sony cameraman. I don't know about necessarily Sony across the board for product loyalty on the whole thing.
Hey, I got to tell you, though, I know we're talking about photography, but you got to try the manual lenses on the digital camera. It's fun. It's a little work, but it's fun.
I haven't used a digital camera in at least 2 or 3 years.
That's not true.
The cameras on my phone, the phone, aside from the phone.
Okay.
I haven't used a dedicated digital camera in about 2 or 3 years because the camera phones have just, it's a lot more portable, and B, the quality is caught up. As far as I'm concerned, I don't have any need to invest, you know, another grand in a camera that does just camera. And then once you take the picture, I know there's things like the not a MiFi, what's it called? The SD card that you've got.
Oh, the iFi, those old iFi.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
I mean, there's ways to get it off the camera, but normally you take your pictures and you still got to transfer them.
Not now. Actually,
not now.
You'd be surprised how easy it is. Your phone I can wire it up with, not wired up, but through Bluetooth, and the camera has Wi-Fi on it. So whenever it goes to transfer pictures, it'll do it through Wi-Fi to my phone.
But that's just it. Why not just take the picture with your phone?
Because there's a lot of, I can't use my old Minolta lenses on my phone.
I realize that, but I don't need lenses on my phone. That's probably getting into a Patreon discussion topic now.
I know what we're talking about tonight.
No, we already had a topic. We'll get into that. Maybe that'll work its way into the topic, because we always start with one and wander wherever it goes. All right. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us. We appreciate it very much that you have taken time out of your busy schedule and shared it with us. Thank you for everybody who joined us on the live stream on Facebook. We also post this to YouTube. You can find us at YouTube Technorama Podcast. Just search for that. You'll find us there. 558 shows. That's pretty amazing. We're coming up on our 14-year anniversary. That's dinosaurs in the podcast world. Not too many podcasts have been around that long, and we are happy to be able to do that.
We're happy to be a service to you.
If you want to leave us a comment about, you know, worst video game ever, or what was our question this week? Brands you're loyal to? 707-530-2428. We'll play it on the show. Or we'll ask you next week on the social networks and get your responses on here as well, whether or not you know it or not. So until next time, give us binary high five, Craig.
101, everybody.
Take
Hopefully
care.
You're loyal to our brand.